The Air Force plans to slash its ranks to fewer than 328,000 by the end of the year. Lieutenant General James Jackson, chief of the Air Force Reserves, says the cutbacks are actually a good opportunity to keep many of its active duty airmen in blue after they leave. Here's an example of how it can work. Colonel Russell Muncy is commander of the 452nd Air Mobility Wing at March Air Force Reserve Base in California. His unit has received the Air Force Association's Reserve Unit Award. He tells me why his unit has been recognized.
Basically, we're out there doing the mission, is what it amounts to. The 452nd Air Mobility Wing is made up of 3,600 military personnel. Most of those are part-time personnel, and another 700 or so civilian personnel. But what that brings to the American public is a very efficient fighting force, because as reservists, we're very cost-effective, very cost-efficient. We're not being paid, basically, unless we're out there doing the mission. But when we're doing the mission, as you can tell, we're doing the mission very, very well.
All right, so you have active duty and reserve and civilian all kind of working simultaneously and interleaving. How does that happen?
Well, basically, my maintenance group says it the best. We are embedded with active duty personnel and reserve personnel in the KC-135 maintenance and operations piece of our mission. And the maintenance folks like to say it like this: one team, one scene. And that is truly the way we make it work. You can't tell who's active duty, you can't tell who's reserve, and it doesn't matter. We're out there doing the mission. It doesn't matter if the mission is for the reserve side of the house or the active duty side of the house. It's for the Air Force, it's for the American public. And we do it well.
All right, we're going to get into the details of what it is you do do. You yourself, Colonel, are you a reserve or active duty?
I am a reservist, and I'm also a government civil servant.
Okay, so how much of a given month are you on the base doing the reserve Air Force work?
Well, I'm actually there every single day in my civil servant capacity running the wing, and then occasionally I will be in a military status such as I am right now, but for the most part, I'm a civil servant.
All right, so you don't have to travel too far to go from point A to point B.
That is correct.
All right, so tell us about the wing itself, the unit. Is it airlift and air refueling or both?
Well, we have multiple missions in the 452nd Air Mobility Wing. The two primary missions are airlift using our C-17 global airlift capability, but we also have our KC-135 with our global refueling capability. But that's only a small portion of what the wing does. We also have a large support personnel from security forces to aerial port to medical to personnel. You name it, we've got it, and we're deploying it 365 around the world.
All right, so mobility is getting stuff from point A to point B.
Yes.
And so that means long distances overseas for the most part. So how does this work then? C-17 is loaded with material, anything you can imagine, I guess, goes on there. And the tanker refuelers, do they take off at the same time or do they take off later? How does that all work? I think people know what happens, but not quite the details.
Well, you really have to even go further back than that and think of why. Back in the Cold War days, we had personnel deployed around the world, or actually stationed around the world. We had a large presence beyond our borders. Nowadays, we don't have that large presence, so that's why the global reach capability is so important. So whatever the mission is, whether we're moving tanks, we're moving personnel, we're moving helicopter, we're moving, as they say, beans and bullets, the supplies that keep operations moving, we load them in the C-17, and we fly them around the world. If refueling is needed, you'll have designated points en route that a tanker will join up with the C-17, give it the fuel, and the C-17 will continue on, and the tank will return to base.
Okay, so is it hard to do that? If you're the KC-135 and you're flying the plane your grandfather also flew, and so you've got a boom going down, tell us what it takes to learn to do that.
Well, I will tell you that I started flying the KC-135 back in 1984, so I've been flying it for 30 years, and it's second nature for refueling. And it's not that big a deal until something goes wrong. But for the most part, you're just flying along, and the aircraft comes up behind you. We've got a professional crew with a boom operator laying in the back. Plane comes up to about 20 feet behind us. The boom operator extends the tube into the other aircraft, and we give them gas. And as I say, 30 years of flying
the tank. You make it sound easy.
I always thought it was, to be honest with you, until last month I got qualified in the C-17. and I attempted refueling, and I have a whole new perspective.
So you were
now
underneath there, and it's a whole different story.
A whole new perspective of what it takes to do refueling. So I'm going to be much more stable when I fly the tanker in the future for my compatriots behind me getting the gas.
All right, so it's a good idea to rotate jobs then from time to time.
It is always good to walk in someone else's shoes and have a better perspective on life.
We're speaking with Colonel Russ Muncie. He is commander of the 452nd Air Mobility Wing at March Air Force Reserve Base in California. And so you must be anticipating the arrival of the KC-46, probably a few years off yet. But what are you hearing about it, and what do you think, how it might change the role of this whole mobility mission?
I think with the KC-46, we'll do quite a bit more airlift, and we'll be able to supplement the C-17 and the C-130 fleet because it is much more capable from an airlift perspective. But from a refueling perspective, I don't think it'll be any different.
So, have you seen one, or have they showed you the innards of it at all?
I have not seen one personally. I have looked at some of the literature on it. So it's been a long time coming. As I said, I've flown it for 30 years, and when I started flying it in the 80s, there was talk that we needed a new tanker. So we're still moving in that direction.
Yeah, so you may live to see it, you're hoping.
Yes, we may live to see it. I'm pretty sure that I shall see the KC-46. Whether I'll fly it or not, that's a different story.
All right, but for those, you know, in any mission where you are reserve but close to being full-time the way you are, I mean, you're involved with the Air Force, I guess, all the time, whether you're depending on what hat at a given hour. What's life like? I mean, how do you prepare for a life of reserve where reserve is called on quite often?
Well, one of the sayings we have in the reserves is that we're stationed locally, but we serve globally. And what that means is we're part of the fabric of the community, of everyday life. We're the firefighters, we're the teachers, we're the bus drivers. You pick it out in the community, and that may be a reservist, whether that be Army, Navy, or Air Force reservist. However, but when we're called upon, we put the uniform on, we do it professionally. We're very, very experienced. We've been doing this for many years. So when we send our team out, we're doing the job very well.
And are you anticipating that you might be called on to do some more airlift as the whole ISIS and that whole mission really starts to take place over the next couple weeks and months?
Well, that's one good thing about the Air Force Reserves is, we in their former lives, if you will, we were a strategic force. Now we're an operational force. We're always ready. We're always trained. So, yes, if we're needed, we're there. And to be honest with you, I'm deploying personnel right now for various reasons, serving combatant commanders around the world. I have KC-135s going out shortly. I have C-17s out right now. And then I have my support personnel deployed around the world as well.
If a buzzer lights up and says, you have to load these things on that plane and get them over there as soon as possible, how long does it take?
Well, if we were sending the entire wing, it would take us a few days to bring everybody in. But if it's, hey, here's the phone call, we need you moving something tomorrow, we can move something tomorrow.
And for each hour flown of one of your aircraft, how long does it take to maintain it, to keep it in the air for an hour?
Well, as far as hours specifically goes, I don't think I could tell you because my maintenance personnel would say, oh, either you went over or you went under. I'll just say that my maintenance folks do an outstanding job. And you think about the KC-135, it is 50 years old. But they maintain a readiness rate of greater than 80% on that very old aircraft. And then on the C-17, they're up around 90% on their mission capability rate. So I have some great maintainers, and those are reserve maintainers as well as active duty maintainers. Once again, one team, no seam.
And throughout all this budget deal that's been happening across all the military services and really the whole federal government, you have been able to maintain that readiness. You have the funds you need to be ready.
Well, yes. I heard you talking a moment ago about, let's say, cost efficiencies and not being wasteful. And that's where the reserve component comes in, I do believe. And that's where March Air Reserve Base plays a significant role. Because not only are we Air Force Reserve, we're also Air National Guard. I've got two Air National Guard units on the base adjacent to me. I've got two Army Reserve Brigades. I've got two Army National Guard companies and an Army National Guard battalion and a Naval Reserve organization. So we truly are about as joined as you can get, and we are as a total force as you can get, providing about 10,000 Guard, Reserve, active duty personnel available to meet the nation's call whenever need in a very cost-efficient manner. Because as in the reserves, we're we're about one-third the cost of an active component over the lifetime of our careers.
All right. And how does kerosene really taste?
I will tell you, having grown up with my father owning a service station, I could almost tell you what that is really a not a good taste.